What's up, everyone? This is episode 262 of the Wax Museum Podcast, where I talk about all things basketball cards from past to present to future. This is your host, Kyle, and as always, you guys can find me throughout the week on social media. My Instagram is at Wax Museum Podcast. My X account is at Wax Museum PC. All right, well, there is a lot going on in the hobby right now, and a lot has happened since I last recorded. I'm not even going to try to cover everything in this opening segment. And then some things like PSA's comments on the Wimby 101 and card cleaning and all that, that's already been covered to death by now. I'm not going to go there this week. I do want to talk a little about Caitlin Clark. And by the time I'm done today, this is going to seem like a very Indiana-focused episode, but you got to understand, my fandom is a huge part of my hobby world. I collect the players and the teams that I like. So I want to start things off with a post Caitlin Clark made on February 29th, where she declared for the WNBA draft. And I think this is exciting for pro basketball in general, because Caitlin obviously has been one of the most exciting storylines over the last couple years, and it will definitely bring a lot more attention to the WNBA, which has been improving with each season as well. I've talked about it with different guests on here before, but I've watched a lot more the last couple seasons, and the current play style in the WNBA reminds me a little of the 2010s NBA, which is probably my favorite era. So I would encourage all of you to give it a chance this season. If you haven't yet, this is probably as good a time as any. I mean, it's going to be a very exciting season. Now, it'll be especially exciting for me because the main team that I watch is the Indiana Fever, and they have the number one pick heading into this draft. And I watched the lottery as it happened, so yes, I was very excited. But those feelings quickly subsided because it looked like a lot of players that were eligible, a lot of the top players at least, might stay in college another year and take advantage of some of the COVID rules and the current NIL situation. And I don't blame them for that one bit. But surprisingly, Caitlin declared for the draft, and I couldn't be happier. And I've tried to be a loyal fan these last couple years, despite the fact that the Fever have been just dreadful to watch at times, aside from Aaliyah Boston. You know what? I take that back. I'm going to add Nelissa Smith in there too, because I think her play was really underappreciated last year. But now if you add Caitlin Clark into the mix, I expect them to make some noise early on, and I'm definitely looking forward to that. Well, less than a week after Caitlin declared for the draft, Panini announced that they have signed the Iowa star to an exclusive deal effective on April 1st, 2024. So that's coming up here real soon. And while I've seen plenty of exclusives in the past, this one feels a little different to me. With the current manufacturing situation, I don't know exactly what to make of this. I think some of it probably has to do with keeping Caitlin out of Topps products, seeing as she's been one of the big draws of the college stuff, including the newly released Bowman's Best U, which I've seen a lot of that over eBay on the past week. I'm not much of a college collector, but I think the patch autos look really nice. They remind me a lot of Panini's silhouette cards, and they're player worn too, which is a plus. But like I said, my guess is part of it is just keeping Caitlin out of future Topps products. And even though Topps doesn't own the WNBA license right now, they could have used her to help move some of their other stuff like Allen and Ginter, like they did with Wimby in last year's release. But that's not the case anymore. Now, obviously this wasn't all defense. I mean, they want to have Caitlin Clark cards, I would think. I mentioned the WNBA license there. As of right now, it belongs to them. It belongs to Panini. And I've tried to get some clarification on how long that license lasts or if it will be switching over to Fanatics with the NBA. But no one I've asked seems to know. Either way, it looks like Panini has big plans for Caitlin in the near future. Panini's press release specifically mentioned a dedicated Caitlin Clark trading card product that you can pre-order in April. And seeing as the draft is on April 15th, I'm guessing they might include some WNBA stuff in there as well. This might also be a good time for them to add another product or two. In the past couple years, it's basically been Prism, Origins, and Revolution, and we didn't even get Revolution in 2023. I think adding something like Chronicles could be a lot of fun, and that would let them capitalize on a lot of previous popular designs as well. But that last part is just something I'd like to see. It's not something I've formally seen announced, so I don't want to spend a lot of time speculating right now, but it's certainly something worth keeping an eye on, especially when those WNBA cards hit. If you can't tell, I've got Caitlin Clark fever cards on the brain, as if I'm going to be able to afford them, but yeah, I'm excited nonetheless. Okay, enough about future cards. I want to move on to some that are here right now. I haven't done a mail segment in a while, at least not on the audio podcast. I know I've shown some of these off on my YouTube, but I'm not going to talk about every card I got in the last month, but I do want to focus on a few of them. And one that I'm going to mention real quick, I think the shipping story is more interesting than the card itself, which was an Optic Gold of Pacers center Isaiah Jackson. You might have seen the picture I posted on social media, but the card was shipped via media mail inside a CD case, like a jewel case, that also contained what I presume is a blank CD. And I know several people commented that, hey, you should put that in your computer or your CD player, you know, if I can even find one, and see if there's anything on it. Yeah, there's a part of me that's a little curious, but I haven't checked it out yet. I'm not sure if I will. I'm probably better not knowing. I thought it was an interesting shipping strategy, though. I was under the impression it was coming Ground Advantage, which is the new name for First Class. I figured they shipped it media mail to try and save a little money. I think maybe they ended up saving a couple bucks, maybe a buck and a half. I guess if you do that a bunch of times, it adds up, but on the flip side, there's no insurance coverage, and I'm definitely not suggesting anyone try this out. Please, you know, ship things as they're supposed to be shipped. But on my end, I'm just thankful that it arrived safely. And the only other time I remember people using media mail to ship me something in an interesting way is when I bought a couple boxes of Topps Total off Amazon, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. They were shipped in a decent sized box, but they were surrounded by old hardback library books, and they weren't interesting books either. So then I was kind of stuck having to do something with them, which I think I ended up taking them to Goodwill. But anyway, never a dull moment in the eBay world. Speaking of which, the second package I want to talk about is from an eBay purchase. It is a 2023-24 Prism Gold of Bruce Brown, number 10 out of 10. And it's funny, Bruce is just now getting his Pacers cards with Pacers jerseys. In this one, he's holding up the jersey. And now Bruce is already gone. And that's not really a Panini complaint of any sort. He just wasn't on the team very long. I mean, they really couldn't get stuff manufactured in time. But I wanted something to represent his time with the team. And like I said, this photo is him holding up that Pacers jersey. I really like that. And going back to the 90s, I love cards with pictures from press conferences. I don't know exactly why. I think it just kind of felt like, you know, cutting edge, like it was hot off the press. This is the very first picture you're going to get of this player. Now, keep in mind that was the pre-internet era. Now you just kind of stream their press conferences live. But another reason I wanted this card was because it was my first look at the new Prism Gold in hand. And you might remember I ranked all 11 years not long ago. I'll have to sit down with this one and figure out where exactly I want to rank it. It is dull, kind of like the rest of the Prism Golds that have come out in the last so many years, so it's going to have to go in that lower half. But the design itself is not that bad, and for the dull versions, the shine pops, you know, decent. So I would put it probably at the higher part of that last group, if that makes any sense. I guess maybe an easier way to say that would be more in the middle. But the last thing that stands out to me about this card is the numbering on the back. And you might have noticed this already if you pulled or purchased any numbered Prism cards from the 2023 product. The stamp or the font looks different. And I've noticed this with a lot of new Topps cards too. So I don't think this is a problem that's exclusive to a particular manufacturer. It probably has something to do with printing. And that makes me believe that both brands are still getting printed in the same place. We've heard that before. I think this kind of, you know, leads us to that theory, or at least some of the cards are, maybe not all of them, because I've seen Topps cards that have two different style of fonts in the same print run, and that could be pretty problematic down the road when we're talking about fraud and other things, but that's a problem for another day. I wish the Prism cards had the same numbering as the 11 years before. I like continuity. It's still a nice card, though. It doesn't really ruin it. I just found it interesting, but glad to add my first 2023 Prism Gold to my binder. It's nice to have one from every year now. Okay, the final card I want to talk about today, though, is even more interesting to me. This is one I've been trying to hunt down for years. And I want to give a shout out to my friend Jason. He's been on the show before, M-Heat Cards, because he helped me track this one down. I wouldn't have been able to get it without him. But this is a 2012 Panini Father's Day GameU's Net Relic from the 2011 Finals, which, as most of you probably remember, was played between the Mavericks and the Heat. And I've read about these cards on the Panini blog. I've seen pictures of them. There was one listed on eBay at an astronomical price. It might still be on there, but otherwise these things have been like a unicorn to me. I could not find them. And there's not a stated print run on the card or one that I've seen published anywhere, but it just felt like these things barely existed. And I mentioned Jason here a minute ago. Well, he bought some final stuff off of a seller, and it turns out that that guy had one of these net cards too. And Jason remembered me talking about them and sharing pictures of them. And he was kind enough to purchase the card from the seller and then sell it to me at cost. And him and I, we were joking a little bit because that was a series that obviously the Heat lost. And I don't think he wants a relic from that. But net cards in general are pretty rare. And to have one with a piece of a finals net from a finals that I was really into is a real treat for me. And, you know, I mentioned that the Mavericks beat the Heat. Well, this was after the whole, you know, LeBron decision situation and then them saying not five, not six, not seven. The Heat were the villains of the league. And yet watching them was must-see TV. And you wanted to see them when you came to your town. And I was fortunate enough to see the Heat in person a couple times in that era. But, you know, thanks to Dirk, this is a Mavericks-themed card. And on the left side, it's got a picture of their championship banner. And then on the right, it's got a picture of their ring. And then the net runs vertically down the middle. And as you might imagine, the card itself is pretty thick. It's not just a tiny piece of net like we got with the Skybox Net Shredders relics in 1999. Or there was another set called Network Executives from Upper Deck Sweet Shot in 2001. Those both had pretty small pieces. This piece is large enough that it has like a knot right in the middle. And it's probably the most unique piece in my finals PC, which I want to take an updated video of at some point. I'll probably try and do that in May or June and have it ready for the upcoming finals. In the meantime, if you want to see the card, you can check out the opening on my YouTube, and then I'll try to get a picture up on social media sometime as well. All right, before I move into today's main segment, I want to remind you that this show is brought to you in part by ComC.com, your home for buying, selling, flipping, and grading now too. Their consignment marketplace is home to over 33 million cards, from basketball's biggest stars like LeBron James and Kevin Durant to Marvel favorites like Spider-Man, Thor, and Captain America. ComC has everything for every type of collector. Visit ComC.com today to build your collection with your favorite cards. Okay, and then real quick, some of you have asked me for ways you can help support this show. The easiest way is my eBay affiliate link, and using this link costs you absolutely nothing, just an extra 30 seconds or so of your time, but it helps support the show. To access this link, simply go to waxmuseumpodcast.com, click the eBay logo, shop as planned, so whatever you are going to buy anyway, just click my link first, and the show gets a small commission in the process. Once again, that's www.waxmuseumpodcast.com.
This is Darnell Hillman. You're listening to the Wax Museum Podcast.
Okay, so about a week and a half ago, I had a fun little outing that I think is worth talking about. I went to the Pacers Magic game in Orlando on March 10th, and that marks the third different arena I've seen them in this season, the other two being Atlanta and Miami. I've talked about those trips on here already. Now, I thought this was the first time I'd seen them in three different arenas in the same season, but I checked my records, and it turns out I did that one other time in 2012, so I guess this ties my personal record, and technically there's still time left this season. I don't think it's very likely I make it to another city, but who knows? They're 3-0 now when I've seen them, so maybe I do need to try and get to more games because they are struggling. They need some wins right now. But anyway, as you guys know, one of my favorite things about going to Pacers games is trying to get autographs before the game. So as usual, I prep my little binder of cards in my clipboard to try to be as ready as possible. And I've said it before, these situations are almost always chaotic and almost unpredictable, but you try to control whatever elements of it you can, and you just use whatever intel you have or whatever past experiences and try and use that to help you as much as possible. So Mrs. Wax Museum and I get there, and we've got tickets in section 103, which is right by the Pacers tunnel, Years ago, pretty much anyone could get down to this section before the game for at least 20 minutes or so before they moved people out. Lately, I say lately, probably the last couple years at least, that's changed to you have to have a ticket in that section and they'll still move you out. Now it seems like they're getting even more strict. And luckily, we had tickets in row 5. I asked the usher, you know, hey, there's no one in these 4 rows in front of me right now. Can I move down? He said, well, the closest I can get you is row 4. We just don't want people rushing down there. Okay, you know, all right, fine. Row 4, it still works. It just seems silly seeing as there wasn't anyone standing in front of us for a long time. You know, this probably doesn't bode well for future trips either, but we were able to make it work this time, and I'm thankful for whatever opportunities we had. And a lot of times I miss the rookies because they generally warm up before fans are allowed into the arena. Luckily, top 10 pick Jairus Walker was still warming up when we got there. I was very happy to see that. And if you follow me on Twitter, you probably seen me tweet the hashtag Free Jairus Walker a million times or so, especially prior to the Siakam trade. And for the record, I love Rick Carlisle, but it seems like he just doesn't want to play Jairus. And the Pacers needed a 4 for so long, and they literally had one on the roster. They used this very valuable pick to get one. Look, I know his defense probably wasn't quite at the level Rick wanted it to be at. I don't think it's going to get much better, though, without NBA experience. So needless to say, I am a Jairus Walker fan, and I've been rooting for him for a while now. Another reason I really wanted to get Jairus's autograph is because he is a Topps exclusive. And you remember I talked about the Caitlin exclusive, right? That has different implications for what cards can be manufactured and what all is possible. So in this case, because he's a Topps exclusive, it's not even possible for me to purchase a rookie auto of him on a licensed Pacers card. And that's the first time that I recall that ever happening with a Pacers rookie, because in the past, even when there were exclusives in the 2000s, well, it was exclusives between different companies that had NBA licenses. And then during the Panini era, the only exclusives would go to, you know, really big guys like, I know at the time, you know, Ben Simmons, which seems funny now, but at the time that was a really big deal. And it kind of, you know, made things problematic because that's who they were going to market things around, and Upper Deck kind of took that away from them. So it was a very strategic move. So anyway, this is the first time I recall it ever happening with a Pacers rookie. And I ended up getting a Hoops rookie sign because that's all I had in the moment. But Jairus gave me a pretty big bold auto on it with his number as well, which is more than I've seen on some of his college certified stuff or the McDonald's Topps cards. That I've got one of those, the paper autos, one of the earlier autos. So I was really pleased with how that one turned out. If I had thought about it more ahead of time, I probably would have stolen an idea that Alex Connell Collection and I talked about, where he said he wanted to get one of the next day no autograph cards and get those autographed. I thought that was a pretty cool idea, but I'm still waiting to get one of those on the cheap. I didn't have it in time, so I had that Hoops rookie, and like I said, it will do for now. I'm very happy with that and how it turned out. Okay, I won't go into that much detail with every player that signed, but I thought that particular instance was hobby relevant with the manufacturer exclusives and all. So sometimes now in this new era, you just have to try and make things happen on your own. So once again, very happy with how that all went down. Now, after Jairus, Obi Toppin stopped and signed. He's always been a good signer every time I've seen him. Unfortunately, he didn't have any base cards in a Pacers uniform at the time. I didn't have any time to make customs, so I had him sign a Donruss rookie where he's pictured in a Knicks uniform. For future reference, he is in the new Donruss Elite as a Pacer, but that literally just came out, and I don't even think it had come out by March 10th when I went to that game. So shortly after Obi signed, I had my first big choice that I had to make, and this is a big part of in-person autographs when players start coming off the court, multiple players at a time. And this time it was Miles Turner and Isaiah Jackson. On the one hand, I've gotten Miles 3 or 4 times before. I knew he was likely to sign, whereas I've never gotten Jackson, and I've heard mixed things about his signing habits. Well, still, sometimes it just depends on who's in the front. And in this case, Miles Turner was walking off first, so I decided to go with the sure thing. I had him sign a Hoops insert that showed him in the middle of a jump ball with Nikola Vucevic. It has a picture from a game I went to in 2018, so that turned out really well. But as I predicted, that meant no Isaiah Jackson autograph. It wasn't a denial or anything like that. It's just he had already passed by. I didn't get a chance to really ask him, you know, before he was already gone. And generally when you ask someone when they've gone by you, it's not going to happen. So I don't even count that as a denial. Although from what Alex has told me, he wasn't likely to sign anyway. And he's not the only player like that. For example, you might remember in Miami, I mentioned, hey, Bruce Brown just did not seem interested in signing at all, looked at my card, walked right by. In this case, Kendall Brown walked right by me when I asked without actually saying anything. And I don't say that as any sort of indictment on players. I mean, you just saw I'm still buying Bruce Brown cards. I'll buy Kendall Brown cards if I need them. They're on my team. I root for them. They're not obligated to sign anything. And anything I can get is really just extra on top of the game itself. That's what I'm paying for a ticket for, is the game itself. Autographs are a bonus. Okay, other signatures. So I got James Johnson, maybe for the first time, even though he's been in the league since 2009. If not, it was the first time in over a decade, and I'll have to look through my stuff, but I think I might have gotten him with Toronto in the early 2010s, but this time around, I got him on a Panini Complete card. And speaking of Panini Complete, I've mentioned before how that was kind of the second coming of a set from 2004 and 2005 I really liked called Topps Total. Well, I got a Topps Total card signed this time around by Pacers assistant Gennaro Pargo, who was on the Bulls roster when that set came out. He didn't have a lot of cards either, but because it was such a big set, they made one for him. Now he's an assistant coach with the Pacers. So here we are 20 years later, and this really is the set that keeps on giving. Okay, I'll try to name these guys off as I got them. I believe the next guy to come off the court was Tyrese Haliburton. I've got him a few times before, but this is the main signature I wanted to come away with once again. I mean, you know, he's the star of my team. And to his credit, he's been a very generous signer in the past. I haven't got him yet this year. One of the games he was hurt, so he wasn't even there. But I really wanted to get him this game. So I went back and forth on what card I wanted to try and get signed. I had a Panini Instant card from the game I went to in Atlanta earlier this year. I thought it'd be pretty cool to get that one signed. I've done it before, but there's a lot of dark sections on that card. And that's what happened the last time I did it, is he kind of ended up signing in a dark area. Not it wasn't anything on purpose or anything like that, but it just didn't show up very well. And I have a couple, actually, that he signed where it's hard to see the auto. So instead, I elected to go with his first photogenic base card from the Pacers, which features an overhead shot from, guess what, another Orlando game I went to. I know, like, I sound like a broken record there. One of my YouTube subscribers joked that he's going to make a drinking game out of every time I say it pictures a game I went to. But hey, it does, all right? So I knew Tyrese was likely to grab one Sharpie at the front of the line and run with it. That's common for some of the players that want to sign a lot of stuff real quick. More often than not, it ends up being a black Sharpie. And this is a card that I chose that I thought would look good in either black or blue. So it turns out I was right about this one. He grabbed a black Sharpie. He went down the line for the most part, and he signed my photogenic base card, and I think it turned out great. And I'm pretty sure I posted that on my Instagram. If not, I can post it. Someone remind me. I'll make sure it gets on there. But it's funny, I think I have 5 Haliburton autographs now, and 4 of them are ones I've got on my own. The 5th is the college RPA I've talked about on here before. Seeing as he is a pretty generous signer, my approach so far has been to avoid buying anything certified, because they are still, you know, kind of pricey for as many of them are out there. And instead of buying that, I'll just use the cost to go towards tickets to see him play in person. And it's worked out pretty well for me so far. I don't think many of the certified ones, especially not the stickers, would mean much to me anyway. So this is kind of a cool way to approach my hobby and approach the favorite player on my favorite team. Okay, enough about Haliburton for now. Even though he was the main goal of the evening, there were other guys that signed after him. I got Jalen Smith and Doug McDermott on Prism Silver cards. That was the first time I had gotten either one of them. Jalen kind of came at the expense of Aaron Nesmith. They walked off at the same time, but I've got Aaron in the past, so I think I made the right call there. And then I was kind of surprised. As far as I remember, I don't think I've got Doug McDermott, even though he's been with the Pacers before. But then I realized, you know what, that was during the COVID era, and access to the team then was pretty much non-existent. Another player that I have never gotten a signature from was Pascal Siakam. And with the exception of a Panini Instant card or two, he doesn't have Pacers stuff yet. So, like I said, with Obi Toppin, I didn't have time to make customs, so I took some Raptors stuff. I'd seen from someone else's recap that he will sometimes sign more than one, so I had a Flux Silver card, and then an old Prestige rookie with me, and he was nice enough to sign both of those. So at this point, it was already a really good night, but it was time for the main reason everyone was there, which was the game itself. And the Pacers, they're kind of teetering on the play-in line right now. I'm recording this on a Tuesday night where they just dropped a really, really frustrating game to the Cavs that they should have won, so they dropped into seventh place. So every game right now against teams in spots 4 through 9 is huge. And Orlando is one of those teams. That's one of the teams they need to be beating. They're trying to catch up with them. And in the past, the Pacers have not matched up to their length all that well. Well, having Siakam on the roster kind of changes that a little. And ultimately, the Pacers were able to pull out a much-needed win. And then on top of that, I got a towel from rookie Ben Shepherd as he was on his way out. And you know what? Seeing as all of the non-flawless rookie relics are non-associated now, the thought has crossed my mind that I could make some sort of rookie patch auto out of it or rookie relic auto out of it. I don't know. I don't really want to cut up the towel. Maybe I could just cut the tag off or something like that. I probably won't do that, but you know what? Like I said, you got to make things happen for yourself now in this hobby, and that was something that crossed my mind. Anyway, this was a really fun outing overall, and you guys might get a kick out of this. As we were driving home, Mrs. Wax Museum asked, "Hey, what's the website you go to look at game photos?" And she was, of course, referring to Getty Images. And she started scrolling through and screenshotting pictures where you could see the two of us in the background. You guys probably remember, because I've talked about it a lot, one of my bucket list items is to show up in the background of a trading card. So now she's kind of got in on this game now, too. And she would say, "Oh, look, I found another one. All right, well, you know, who is it?" It's this guy named Gary Harris. Yeah, no, they're not going to make any more base cards of him. So then she'd look again. Okay, here's another one with a guy named Paolo. Okay, yeah, bookmark that one. He's going to be featured on a lot of cards and so on and so on. So we played this little game. And she also asked, "Do you stop wearing yellow to games once you finally show up on a card?" Which, yeah, that's another good question. I think the answer to that is probably yes. I've got some nice black City Edition shirts I'd love to wear to games, but I'm not wearing those right now. That doesn't mean I don't wear them elsewhere, but right now we are blue and gold, full speed ahead when we're going to games. All right, well, there you have it. Obviously, I live very far away from my favorite team, so it's always a treat whenever they come to the Sunshine State or another state surrounding me. Maybe you've had a chance to autograph your favorite team at some point in your life. Feel free to drop me a comment and tell me about it on social media. You can find me on Instagram under @WaxMuseumPodcast or X under @WaxMuseumPC. In the meantime, if you like the content I'm providing, please subscribe, rate and review on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcast. Hit up the website for my affiliate links. Tag Taco Bell and let them know they can pay me in burritos. And until next time, this is the Wax Museum Podcast.